Hello and welcome to The Blockchain and Us, where pioneers and thought leaders talk about their journey in blockchain technology, crypto assets, and the token economy. And I'm your host, Manuel Staggers. This episode has support from no official sponsor, but from my very own The Blockchain and Us newsletter. Get an email from me every 2 weeks with a very short summary of new podcast episodes so you can immediately pick those interviews you'd like to listen to. To stay up to date, just visit www.theblockchainandus.com and sign up today. My guest today is Matthias Ruch. Matthias is the founder and managing partner of Lakeside Partners, one of the leading early-stage investment companies in Switzerland's crypto valley, and he is the co-initiator of the blockchain competition and the initiator of Crypto Valley Labs. Matthias has been in the digital startup scene for 20 years as an entrepreneur and angel investor, and before focusing on blockchain technology, he built and exited several successful online and media companies. Matthias is also leading the blockchain task force assembled by the Swiss Federal Council. And now, to the interview. Hi, Matthias, and many thanks for making time today.
Hi, Manuel. Very nice to be here. Thank you.
Matthias, you have built and sold several companies in media and fintech, and now you're mainly an investor in blockchain companies. What do you find so attractive about this sector?
I am not only an investor, or we are not only investors, we have become enablers, facilitators here at the Crypto Valley. So, you know, the term investor wouldn't be entirely correct, you know, compared to what we are doing. But to answer your question, I need to go back in time, right? Because when I started my professional career roughly 20 years ago, that was during the dot-com boom. Here in Switzerland, in Europe, we also experienced a kind of a dot-com boom. What I experienced then is quite similar to what we are experiencing today here in Switzerland at the Crypto Valley. So what is interesting to me as an entrepreneur, this opportunity that actually really lies in front of me is so huge that I don't want to miss out as an entrepreneur.
But what exactly is the opportunity?
I think this is the most important opportunity in a professional sense of my life and for Switzerland as well. And the opportunity is to build a new ecosystem based on a technology called blockchain, which has the power to transform not only businesses, but also societies. And it all happens in front of my door, by accident. I just live here, and the world comes to my place. And this is just fascinating.
How did you get into this field? I mean, how did you first hear about cryptocurrencies or blockchain technology?
I'm a new kid on the block. So I'm not one of the guys that has been in there since 2009. But I'm a tech savvy person. So I've been in the digital startup industry for 20 years. So when we started 20 years ago, my first startup was a dating platform for teenagers. And the reason I you know was tapping into blockchain was for the past 10 years, I've been an angel investor, and I was a bit tired of always experiencing the same issues with the startups, right? So we identified three core issues, and we wanted to tackle them with a new investment model that we called smart capital investment model. And this model would, the goal of this model was to align interests amongst all stakeholders of a startup project, right? So not only the founders, but also the people that would support the founders in the beginning. So people that would design websites, that would create applications, that would do the legal stuff, the legal framework. So we came up with a system that we would invest, and all the service providers around that startup would be participate participating in the form of virtual shareholders. So in the case of a liquidity event, they would participate as well. Makes them actual real shareholders. And you know, when we started that, that was in 2014, we didn't actually start in a fully digitized way. So we just had our Excel sheets and our old school contracts with all the service providers. And we realized, well, if there would be a software that could do that, including the contract thing and, you know, the automated payout, for example, that would be fascinating and just perfect for our case. And this is when I stumbled upon blockchain, because that technology existed, but I didn't know of that technology before.
Who told you about it?
I read about the DAO, actually. So we were at the time, that was a couple of months before the DAO, what we were screening or using for our investors presentation was the crowdfunding market, right? And when you start looking into the crowdfunding market with AngelList and who is out there, you start to learn you know, how it works and what the other players were. And then based on the concept that the DAO introduced was exactly what we were looking for, right?
Mm-hmm. And that was the first decentralized autonomous organization.
Yes, yes. You know, and what they wanted to do, as far as if I remember correctly, was actually also supporting projects, you know, that would, it would be completely community-based. They would vote for projects that get funded, and this was very appealing to us, and seemed like the solution, the way to go. What's the technology behind? What is blockchain? Of course, I had heard of Bitcoin before, but only in the sense of a cryptocurrency. I didn't look behind. You know, I was the same as everybody is today. They don't look behind Bitcoin and all the cryptocurrencies. It's just a hype. But what they don't know, and what I didn't know at the time, was the powerful technology behind that.
Mm-hmm. And the DAO as an investment fund is where you thought, you know, we can also do that. It's actually exactly what we're already doing, but just in a little bit maybe less elegant way.
Yes, we were. So the story with Lexia Partners is exactly that. We were pivoting at the time, right? So we were saying, okay, let's create a platform. Let's do that online and let's use this technology. We haven't implemented it ever, to be honest, right? But because the blockchain hype came. Right. So what we did is we incorporated Lakeside Partners and we started to look into the blockchain space here in the crypto valley. Because when we started, we weren't actually focusing on blockchain yet. Our investment focus areas were lifestyle and entertainment and fintech in a very broad sense, right? And of course we said, okay, blockchain might belong to fintech in a very broad sense. But then when we started to look into the crypto valley and the players here, what we realized was there is an ecosystem. It was a fragile one, right? So, you know, we talked to the government, to the canton. We heard about how Ethereum came here. We met with the guys from Ethereum. We met with Mihai and other people. And we started to learn how this all developed or was developing. And, you know, our decision that we took at the time, that was maybe early 16, I would say, was, okay, we want to invest into the technology blockchain as a new focus area. And let's see what's out there. And for us, for early stage investors, what we realized is, if we want to generate future investment opportunities, we have to invest into incubation. So one step before early stage, because the space isn't there yet, right? It's the projects, they didn't have the same maturity level that the startups we were used to look at had at the time. So for us, it was, the decision was, yes, we are going to invest into blockchain technology, but with a different business model called incubation. And we launched several activities. The first activity that we actually launched was the blockchain competition. And this was really actually, that was based off an idea of one of our consultants, of our IT consulting company. And he said, let's do a startup competition for the blockchain startups. And we were, okay, let's do that. And let's not do finance, because everybody else did and does finance at the time. Let's do something different. Let's do insurance, because we know the insurance market in Switzerland, and we have a network in the insurance market, Switzerland and Europe. So we did blockchain for insurance. So the niche of the niche. And, you know, what happened was we added a price tag that was pre-ICO craze, right? We added 100,000 USD. Don't ask me why we added fiat money at the time, but we did. And we were the biggest blockchain contest worldwide at the time. So this gave us a lot of attention. And, you know, the story ended with over 100 applications from like 37 countries. Very international, right? So only a few ones were from Switzerland at the time.
Mm-hmm. It's also, I mean, of course, it's good about promoting the ecosystem mm-hmm. this way, but it's also a sourcing strategy.
Now, of course, yes. Now for us, it's deal flow, if you want to use the investors' lingo.
Mm-hmm. So when you look at projects for you, you know, that are relevant as investments, what do you look at?
You know, the challenge, we looked at over 1,000 projects the past 12 to 18 months.
And those are all blockchain-focused projects?
Yes. We quickly started to position ourselves as blockchain-focused investors at the Crypto Valley, which was a unique proposition or position at the time. So you know, the Canton started to send the people over. Sometimes they would just Google and they would just knock on our doors and they would just come in. They would just come here and say, I am this project, I'm from Japan, I need funding, I want to set up shop here today.
Right.
What do I have to do?
And then what do you do?
And then we started to talk to all of them.
So you invite them and say, please pitch to us.
Yes.
So when they pitched,
yes,
what were the things that you focused on?
People that will come here, they had seen the huge ICOs and they wanted to do the same. So the first line when they came in here, it was always the first slide said, our min cap is 100 million. We're going to fund 100 million. This was the line they started with, right? After 2 months, we couldn't take it anymore, right? But we really listened to all of them because we had to adapt, right? 9 out of 10 of these projects wouldn't have made it into the boardroom before, you know, because they would lack basically everything. I mean, a lot of these projects were based on a white paperish kind of documentation, a team based out of 3 people distributed all over the world, a fancy website. That was it, right? It just wouldn't make sense to give them 100 million. But a lot of these people and projects, they would walk out and a couple of weeks later, they would get the funding. And
from their ICO.
From their ICO, mm-hmm. Yeah. So we've seen that a lot. And
over 1,000 came through the door.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And how many did you end up working with?
So we took a different approach. Maybe this is the Swiss way. I don't know. But we always said, me and my 2 partners, Marco and Ralph, we said, we don't want to speculate. We could have done speculating at any point, actually, right? And a lot of people had, of course. But we said, we are entrepreneurs, right? So we've been entrepreneurs for the past 20 years. We are in it because of the entrepreneurs and because of the entrepreneurial spirit and the creativity the technology actually sets free. That's what fascinates me still today, the amount of creativity that the technology kind of frees up in people's minds, you know, that this is really fascinating. And we said, every decision we take today, because we were, first it was clear that we are on the way up of this life cycle, right? So, and sometime, at some point it will go down, right? And we want to be ready when it goes up again, when the rebound phase comes, right? So every decision we take here today has to be one that would be still valid after the bubble crashes, right? Or bursts.
So it has to be a long-term viable project.
For us it has to be, you know, I mean, when it comes to deliverables of these projects, a lot of these projects, they wouldn't actually know how they would deliver what they think their project is, right? So they would lack of basic entrepreneurial skills and preparations, and they would just go for that. And I don't think it's very healthy if you have 100 million on your account somewhere, on your wallet, and you're exploring your way through how you could realize your idea, right? I think it's just not healthy. And a lot of these projects and people were very young, right? And you just lack of experience. And then when you have so much money, a lot of advisors will jump in and tell you what you have to do. You have to be a very strong personality to get things done if you have this kind of situation.
Mm-hmm. And obviously you want to invest in those teams and entrepreneurs who have that personality.
Yes.
So what is for you a way to find out if somebody has that?
You know what, we quickly started. So let's go back to these first 3 months. We listened to everybody and it was painful. But we learned, right? And we had to adapt and it quickly, very, very quickly came down to talking to the people behind. So we would, for example, we would say, listen, if you want to get funded or if we should help you on the process to an ICO, we want to see the core team and you have to come to Zug. And a lot of people, a lot of these projects actually did. They came here and because they wanted to see the crypto valley and you know, also check out the ecosystem. And for us, this was a good kind of a first threshold when it comes to selecting the projects, because in the end it all breaks down to execution also in this space, right? And execution has to be done by people with skills and brains. Mm-hmm.
So then the team that was previously decentralized, one guy in Estonia, another guy in Ukraine, the other guy maybe a Swiss person, and then you know a guy from the UK, they all flew to Zug. Met you here.
I mean, the core people, it was always, we wanted to see the founder. So a lot of times these were the tech people, but sometimes they were the business guys, right? And then we wanted to see the tech guy as well, because we would always challenge the business cases the traditional way, right? So there's the business case, so someone needs to design the business model. How do you think this will evolve? We all know that a business plan is outdated after the second you hit the save button, right? But still, you have to have a plan how you do it, right? And, you know, then we would bring in the tech people from our side that would challenge the use of the technology. And then we would learn how to actually judge a project. And what we then did is different to maybe other investors is we focused on verticals, on industries. And we started with those we knew best. So we started with insurance, and we would pick one company that we think is doing well and has a good setup and has a promising idea. And we incubated them. So we applied the smart capital approach in the sense that we would coach them, that we would help them set up shop, we would discuss a company structure with them. We would challenge the business case. We would help them get new partners. The basic stuff that you would do with a regular startup. And then we went from insurance sector to the next sector. We looked at...
Let me go back there again. Because I'm just very interested in, you know, what makes a good team. And I mean, also I started some companies myself and I've worked with many entrepreneurs and I've seen, you know, some of the mistakes they make when they present their idea or also themselves and others that did exceptionally well. And there is kind of a blueprint there, I think. So, of course, you know, it comes down to experience. You have to know, can these people deliver? But what exactly is the characteristic, you know, that you look for?
What me personally, what I think is very important is sometimes the people with the greatest ideas and with a strong execution power in the first phase or phases of a project, they are not the right ones when the company reaches the next level, when it comes to growth, for example, right? Even I might not be the right person for a project that I am actually setting up at the moment for a later stage. And it takes a lot to be able to say and step back and get someone else do the job at the front. So you either have to be very skilled in a lot of different areas of expertise, or you have to be able to make the right decision to get other people on board. That's the most important thing. I mean, it's done by people in the end, and you have to be able to get the right people.
Mm-hmm. And so you need to see if people are able to work with a team.
Open. Are you open? Are you open to suggestions? If we tell you, if we criticize your project, how do you handle that? Can you deal with critical questions? What happens with you when someone says, listen, I don't think this is going to work? Are you open to suggestions? How you could do it differently? Are you open to have someone beside you coaching you on a specific aspect? Are you open to let go of things that you thought were crucial for the success of the project? Are you open to reduce your idea to the max? Right, and this can be very painful. I noticed from my own experience.
Mm-hmm. How do you test for that ability?
You cannot test everything, right? And in the end, it's also gut feeling, right? So we keep saying, there's a joke that we keep making. You know, we can come up and we can show you our investment model and how we judge the projects and the people and everything. But to be honest, in the end, a lot of our decisions are also based on gut feeling. Of course, we have criteria, strategic ones, why we want to invest into certain categories or sectors and products. But when you sit in front of people, it breaks down to do you think they are, can they do the job, or can they bring the people that can do the job?
Mm-hmm. Yes, so a human component, not just the technology, not just the revenue, not just the profit potential, but are they likable?
This is how we work, right? I can just tell you how we judge or how we do it in the space that we are in currently. And you know, it also when we start, because we are starting our own ventures and we have so many projects going on. When we started looking into the space, we said we don't want to do projects and we don't want to do events. Now we do like 4 events a year, and I don't know how many projects we started on our own. When you meet new people and you're confronted with new ideas that have great potential, and you decide that you want to follow up on that idea and you try to realize that, doesn't it just also come down to the chemistry between the people involved, right? So do you like to work with that person? Do you think you can go through the ups and the downs that will come in a project? How are you going to feel actually in such a situation with the people that are closest to you? And for our companies and for our history, this has been crucial. It's all about relations between the people in your closest circle and how you tackle tough situations, because there are going to be a lot of tough calls that you have to make.
Absolutely. A lot of the entrepreneurs I see in the blockchain and crypto space, they say, I work on this for years already, every minute of the day. Is that a good sign for you?
Well, dedication is good, right? So I think passion eats strategy for breakfast, right? And many other things. So passionate people, hardworking people is good, but you can also lose sight of what's really important, right? So you can be very focused on one thing and you might not be able to listen what other people or what even the market is doing, right? So there's a possibility that you can lose track of what's happening out there. And, you know, if you end up 4 years later with the idea you had 4 years ago, but the world moved on and you're stuck with an idea that is no longer right for the market or the current situation, you can be stuck. So there's good and bad to that. We really like passionate people. But again, you have to be open to what's happening around you. Happened also to me that I wasn't right in previous projects, and if you are not, people and the world moves on, and you might be outdated.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I understand. I mean, it's definitely I know that for myself. Whenever I start something, I do it 200%. I mean, if that's even possible, right? And yeah. So, but I've seen then, you know, I always thought this is a fantastic thing. You know, it's a great quality to have. This hyper focus on this one goal, but I find it can also be not that great. I mean, because I've seen many people who didn't have that and succeeded wildly.
Yes, I agree. The problem, if you have experienced, and maybe we share this experience, you want to go back there. The only thing you want to experience is you want to experience the same thing again. It's the same with me, right? So I was very lucky when I was very young, to have founded a company that became successful very fast. So that was during the dot-com boom. That was the dating platform for teenager turned into a TV show. And this TV show here in Switzerland somehow became very popular in a target group of the young people, and this was the flavor of the day at the time, and we grew very fast, had new ideas, and we were very lucky because also the new formats that we introduced to the audience, they liked it, and that this experience, you know, you would go to sleep because you have to sleep, and you know, you would only want to sleep the minimum amount of hours so you can get up and get back to what you did the day before, right? And this happened over and over again. And you know, like all good things, they come to an end. And my end there was we sold the company. And for example, I completely misjudged to what it means to sell your meaning of life, because that's what it was. I thought it wasn't. I thought it was just a company. And I could, you know, sell it and then move on. But I sold my heart. And this was a really strong experience. And to be honest, and I'd say I had successful companies after that one, I never experienced that again, the same way, right? But I strive for this experience. So I would second your opinion or your experience that there is those that have had this kind of full dedication and passion and were successful, and there is those that didn't but were still successful. So probably I would agree it isn't the number one ingredient that you need to have to be successful, but it helps in the sense of it's fantastic fun.
Good point. Yeah, I mean, you know, I like to find out, you know, today, because I mean, that was almost 20 years ago for me, right? When I had these companies and did this work. And now, you know, I see a lot of very young entrepreneurs go at this crypto and blockchain sector with similar ideas, you know, to do something that's very meaningful, that has a huge impact in the long run. And they have similar dedication, some of them, and others are very different. But I find that at the end of the day, you know, how you approach something hasn't really changed. It's still the same, right? I mean, of course, it's a different field.
Yes, no, I completely agree. And that's what we are experiencing now, right? So I could put it like this. Common sense is back in the system, which is good. it just doesn't make sense to give someone huge amounts of money based on nothing. It's not healthy in the long run for the person that, you know, gets the money as well. So, yeah, I would completely agree. I think things haven't changed, and I also agree that there's a lot of people with a great amount of dedication and idealism and you know, strong strong messages behind the projects, and really they want to change things, and it's fantastic to see. But you still have to make it happen, right? So it's not just the idea that is sufficient. You know, you really have to think, okay, what does it mean if you want to bank the unbanked? What does it mean if you want to get rid of the intermediaries between A and Z because you are introducing this token or this tokenized process? If you know, what does it mean to deliver what you are promising? What does it mean if you want to, you know, bring the financial system, for example, to a community of millions of people that didn't have that before? This is it sounds fantastic, but the rollout plan is really hard.
Mm-hmm. Yes, execution.
And yes, execution. And if you are, and I was the same, right? So I was 20 when I started this, these platforms during the dot-com boom. You think you can do anything, when you're so convinced of what you are doing, but what you don't have is the experience. And there is people who have the experience. And to be able at this age to accept people with that experience coaching you is really the skill that it takes, in my opinion, also right now in this situation we are in right now.
Back then, did you have that skill?
Not all the time. No, I was really, to be honest, I was really lucky that we hit the flavor of the day during these days with other companies as well. You know, we started with developing community tools. That was pre-Facebook. You know, Facebook wasn't there, but everybody needed to communicate through the websites with blogs and you know, polls and chats. And we had a software suite, you could call it like that, right, that you could implement into your website, and then, you know, you could communicate with your community. Community tools, we called it at the time. That was successful as well. But then I had ideas that weren't successful, where I obviously didn't listen to the world around me mm-hmm. as well.
Is this something you'd do different if you could, you know, if you could do it again?
Let's take a quick break for a message from our sponsors. This episode has support from no official sponsor, but from my very own The Blockchain and Us newsletter. Get an email from me every 2 weeks with a very short summary of new podcast episodes so you can immediately pick those interviews you'd like to listen to. To stay up to date, just visit www.theblockchainandus.com and sign up today.
Yes, yes, I do a lot of things differently. I try to get the right partners involved at the very early stage. You could also say my stake gets smaller, right? But then the chances that it is going to be successful are much higher. This I do differently compared to I did 20 years ago. And it's hard, right? It you have to give away. You think you have the idea and you have figured it all out, but why should I include you? And the reason you should include someone else is he can help you with something you might not achieve yourself. And this was my learning, for example. This was really, I had to learn that and to understand and to open up.
What else would you do differently?
Not a lot, actually. I would still try out things, and as an entrepreneur, you have fun was of essence all the time to me. It's I have to like what I do all day, right? So and you know, fun isn't always the best advisor when it comes to entrepreneurship, but it's important. And then you try things out, and you know, sometimes you really have to do something in order to find out if it works or not. And I would do it the same. You know, maybe I wouldn't, with what I know now, I wouldn't start the one or two projects that, from how I see it today, were very naive, right? So but that comes with experience. That's completely okay. You lose money, you get money, you invest money. That's the game, right?
Yes, and there's more where that's coming from.
Yes, that's true.
Matthias, I also wanted to ask about another thing you're doing, which is the Swiss blockchain task force mm-hmm. with the Swiss government. Mm-hmm. So did you initiated that project, right?
Yes, together with Lorenz Furrer. What year is it now? 2018, right? So 2017, in the summer of 2017, the federal councillor, Johann Schneider-Ammann, he's the Minister of Economic, he reached out to the canton of Zug and he told them, I would like to learn everything about Crypto Valley. Now, he could have sent a delegation and, you know, they could write a report and he could read the report. But he said, no, I want to go there. And the canton reached out to us and said, could you organize an afternoon? And could you somehow come up with a structure for this afternoon? And of course we did. And, you know, we said what we should do is we should really focus on the people and the projects that are active in this space, right? So because he wasn't an entrepreneur himself and, you know, hearing from people that are actually doing projects and startups right now would be the best. And so he came, we invited a bunch of people and projects, they would tell them, the whole delegation and him, what they are doing, what their experience is, the pros and cons and why this is working and what maybe needs to be done. And I had the impression he was really fascinated by what's happening here at the Crypto Valley. And I kept in touch with them and I told them, if you ever need something like that for the members of the parliament, we'd be happy to organize a similar workshop in the capital, in Bern. Because what we realized at the time already was that we are in a bubble here, you know. I live in Zurich. Every morning I drive to Zug. I enter the bubble. I leave the bubble. And even my wife doesn't understand what I'm doing. And so when it comes to the people, I mean, really, also the people in Zug, the people on the streets, and the members of the parliament, they have no idea what's going on. And how could they? I mean, how could they have an image of what's going on at the Crypto Valley? Because that's really difficult, right? So I had a couple of meetings outside this bubble where I started talking about tokens and blockchain and everything, and eyes got bigger and bigger. And you know, after like some 5 to 10 minutes, I realized, do you understand anything I'm saying? And people would go, no. And you have to be very basic, you know, if you try to explain what's happening. And this was a learning as well for us. And
but they still wanted to learn about it. I mean,
no, they're very curious, right? So what then happened? So there was this call from the communications guy of Johann Schneider-Ammann who called me and said, can you come to meeting? And I said, yes, of course, happy to. And I went there, and I expected a one-on-one, and this was a table, a room full of people, and we had this lunch, and they were asking me what I should do, or what I would do And I said I would try to integrate all the stakeholders of the ecosystem, not only the startups, but also the legacy industry, the politicians, society, research. So everybody who is actually involved in what's happening or will be involved, because technology is going to have an impact on many of the industries and the businesses in the industries as well, and even on the people. Mm-hmm.
But why did they reach out to you? I mean, sure, they wanted to understand what's happening, but I mean, the Swiss government isn't necessarily known for being risk-seeking, right? So, but what was their realization, well, or their motivation behind that?
There has been people like Johann Schneiderman who understood the opportunity. And you know, if you understand the opportunity, you cannot miss out. You know, one of our startups, Stefan Karpyshev, he once said, the moment you will start to understand or learn about blockchain, you cannot sleep anymore, something like that. And that's true. And this happened to these people as well. So they understood the opportunity for Switzerland and for, you know, the Swiss economy.
But that was somebody from the parliament?
Also, yeah. So members of the parliament understood. They're very savvy people. And, you know, with the rise of Bitcoin, there was a time when Bitcoin was in everybody's mouth, right? And you have to become active at a certain point, because when you read in the papers about the next ICO that has hit the 200 million goal happening in Zug, people start to ask questions, not only the nice ones, but maybe also the other ones. And they have to become active, right? So there's always pros and cons when it comes to new technologies that have to power to change things, and normally you in the beginning overestimate what they can do, but in the long run they probably can do a lot of things. And you know, so to come back to this lunch, the way it went on was that Lorenz Fuller, my co-initiator, said, let's do this. And when we reached out to those people of all the stakeholders that we wanted to have in the task force, everybody said yes. We launched this task force in less than 2 weeks, and we wrote just one email to all these people, and everybody said, yes, I want to join. So we knew that we were on the right track. And these were personalities, you know, CEOs and politicians, counselors, senators. And yeah, I remember our inaugural meeting was in early January this year. I think we invited 35 persons. Out of these 35, two were federal counselors. Normally they don't show up, right? So 33 came. So everybody wanted to be part of that task force. And yeah, this is how it took off.
Also the entrepreneur, I mean, a lot of entrepreneurs in this field also are in the task force.
Yes, of course. No, of course, the industry has to be represented in there. It all breaks down to regulatory issues, right? So how should the space be regulated? That was the main question from the beginning. And you have, if you want to do smart regulation, you have to have the people that are in the space. You have to have the startups, the thought leaders that are at the forefront of what's happening. So they had to be in there, but as well, every other stakeholder, such as research and ETH, for example, and politicians and the legacy industry, even the banks, mm-hmm. Everybody was in there.
What is the main goal of the task force?
So when people ask me, why are you doing this? Because it's really a lot of work to lead a task force of 50 personalities and to deliver something with this group. And we wanted to deliver, and we have to deliver very fast because of the space moving so fast. I said there's two aspects to it. There's a personal one. As an entrepreneur, I want to I don't want to miss out on the opportunity. And I'm a Swiss citizen. I chose to live here with my family. I have two small kids. And I'm very lucky to be here. I'm very lucky that this happens in front of my door. And if I can help make this ecosystem and this opportunity more attractive and sustainable, there's something I can actually do for the future generations, because this can be a massive industry. And I want to have the industry here, or part of the industry here. Of course, it's a decentralized world, and I think that maybe there will be different jurisdictions catering to different needs of the industry, but I want Switzerland to be one of these hubs that can cater to a certain industry. And there are people that understand that, and that's the goal of the task force. To keep the, we have a competitive advantage, if you want to call that, based on what had happened in the crypto valley. And, you know, there's not only us that wants to get the industry. So there's other countries and jurisdictions in this geopolitical race. And so we're working to keep this ecosystem and to make it more attractive in the future.
Mm-hmm. How good a location is Switzerland for this field?
Well, what we did is we ask all of the startups why they come here. This gives you an impression, a very objective impression on why they come here. There's the classic reasons. Stability, quality of life, when it comes to the legal aspects, to the legal framework, it's clear you have it defined. We have the categories released by the regulator, even though there is still some clarity missing in the details. You have a framework, and you can, and if you comply with the laws behind the framework, you have a clear legal situation.
So legal certainty.
It gives you exactly legal certainty. And this is really important to most of the startups. And then you have an ecosystem where you have service providers that can help you actually get going, right? So you can be very fast here. What makes Switzerland unique is experience and expertise. Nowhere else in the whole world have there been so many projects at a very small place. I mean, if you look at Zug, it's a really small city, right? And if you go to a meetup here, what's different to maybe meetups in Singapore or in other places, that's what the startups tell us, is the amount of founders and thought leaders and, you know, project initiators is massive. So out of these 100 people, 50 are the people that actually lead the space or lead projects in the space. So you meet with Louis from Aragon, you meet with the Millenpoor people, there's Shapeshift, there's Bancor, there's Cardano, and these people are here, and you meet with them, and this is what fascinates, you know, the other startups. So it's a mixture between network effects that kick in, and then there are the role models here. You know, the story with Ethereum began here, and then, for example, Mihai, he comes here often, and they contribute and they want to give back to the ecosystem, and it makes it a very special place at the moment. So the jurisdiction, I would say, is number one. So the legal framework, the legal clarity, the community here, the service providers, and, you know, it's also good for raising money in the end.
Mm-hmm. And you said it before, the people. I think the people are very open. It's a very flat structure. I mean, I've seen this over and over again with my projects. I mean, I made over 100 interviews for my films, and I mean, it wasn't that hard to get interviews in Switzerland with very, very high-ranking people.
That's true. This is very special. So, there's this point that I make. Switzerland has decentralization and consensus in its DNA. It sounds a bit cheesy, but it's true. With the federal system, the democracy system, you know, with the cantons and they can decide a lot, right? And this is very appealing to the community, and they quickly understand how this works here. So the authorities and how approachable they are, this is very important. I mean, when you ask the people from the government that were there when Ethereum came here, Vitalik and his crew, you know, of course they didn't understand what they want to do, but they wanted to learn, and they listened to them, and you know, they organized them the apartment where they could live, and they helped them settle down, and they helped them you know, create an atmosphere and a setup so that they could realize their idea. And this is very unique. So still now, when it comes to having someone from the cantonal or the city government come over when a startup is here and wants to learn about how, you know, things are going here, we call them up and they come over, and it's literally a short walk. And this is very, very unique. I think it's also a bit unique to Zouk, this open-minded mindset to the authorities here. Because I've lived in Zurich, in Bern, and somehow there's a really open mindset here in Zouk. And I keep saying blockchain, first of all, isn't a technology, it's also a mindset. It's how you think and how you look at things. And so that's what we are told by a lot of the startups. This is what makes the place very appealing to settle down and start your shop here.
It's a good point. I mean, that mindset, I wanted to ask you about that a little before. You know, when you look at this government task force, right, I'm sure there are some hardliners maybe in this space who say, well, that's the last thing we need. We'll just disrupt everything. We make the banks go away. We make the, you know, we build our own system. We don't need to kind of, you know, integrate ourselves in what all these old structures that exist. We just create our own. I mean, how important have you found that to be in this blockchain or crypto movement?
You mean this anti-establishment attitude and the power to disrupt basically everything towards having the space regulated and the need to structure a few things, maybe.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. Yes. I mean, of course, you know, it's important to have regulation, because if you break the law, then, you know, your company will be shut down, or you get a lawsuit on your hands from, you know, maybe the authorities or investors who are unhappy with how you dealt with their money, right? So you need regulation. But on the other hand, you see, you know, some of these companies in the field saying banks will not be necessary soon anymore. You know, laws could be code. And then there is a question, where is that balance? And how happy are those incumbents who are also part of that task force to hear those stories?
Mm-hmm. So it is, I think, you know, it is very important that these maybe radical views are there, right? Because they drive the development. And you know, if you look at Satoshi's white paper, this is very radical to the original concept behind Bitcoin.
Well, it's an anarchist.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
I mean, it's so then, you know, so, an anarchist collaborating with the government. I mean, how does that go together?
So you're right. So if you, I mean, this was based on an anarchist idea, right? And this had made all this possible. And I can completely understand that as soon as, let's say, business or governments kick in, this is something that might not correspond to the original idea of the core blockchain enthusiasts. And I completely understand that. But at the same time, it's a reality, right? And you have to tackle with reality. For example, regulation is a very good example of how reality kicks in. If you start to collect money from people, so-called investors in the old world, you have a certain responsibility to fulfill. And when and if you don't take this seriously, I'm not saying that that the space doesn't take this responsibility seriously, but you have to be aware of that responsibility. You because you are collecting money from other people and you're promising to deliver something, and this is just natural that at some point regulation will kick in. Now, your question was, how does this original idea and the concept and the people that represent the core idea of blockchain, how does this match with a task force? What you have to understand is what we are doing with the task force is we're trying to regulate as few as possible. We want to have the idea of the task force is to have as less regulation as possible, as much self-regulation as possible at the same time. And this is actually the current mindset of the regulator, of the government. If you look at it, it's a very easy situation when it comes to regulation at the moment here in Switzerland. So I think even the core community profits from the current situation.
The current situation being this light touch regulation.
Yes, this light regulation. There is this FINMA guidelines with the categories, and for example, we one of the results of the task force was a token map, and this token map takes into account that the community and the teams, they will come up with new tokens every day, new token aspects, right? So, and this is a great thing, but you have to be aware as a regulator and everybody else involved in the space that this will change and evolve quickly and every day. But the regulator has a different take on that. He needs to categorize that. And then the investors, they have another take as well, because they look at things from a risk perspective. So they need a different kind of approach on how a token is designed. And bringing all these three things together, this is what we are going to do and currently working on, so that if you as a designer of a token or of a startup define the aspects of your token, you will know in what category you are going to end up regarding the regulatory framework. So for example, this is helpful because regulation is there, and this can be a good tool for the community, including those that think we don't want to be touched by anybody else, right?
Mm-hmm. Do you have these discussions? I mean, it seems to me that here in Switzerland, everybody's pretty amicable. You know, it's not a very confrontational spirit.
Yes.
Is that also your experience?
Yes, that's what I say when it comes to this consensus in the DNA. That's a strong pro in my opinion of the Swiss society, that you discuss things and you try to find a solution for these circumstances. But I experienced this as well, right? So we have people that probably think that we are not radical enough when it comes to how you could structure or how you could not structure the regulatory environment. And I completely understand that. And there are voices that say this is not good for the community, or this is maybe not the right direction. But what I think is what we all have in common is to foster this ecosystem and to make this grow and to support it. We all have the same in mind, and we are in open discussions. We have, you know, there's lots of people that are, in my opinion, core enthusiasts, core blockchain enthusiasts that are working with us. Maybe not in the task force, but they are influencing on different levels, and they give inputs, and the dialogue is going on. I don't see it as a problem, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Matthias, I mean, you have so much experience as an entrepreneur yourself, then as an investor, I mean, as an angel investment, early stage. And now you have all this, you know, you're bringing the ecosystem together here in Switzerland for blockchain technology and crypto. Who, in all this work, who are your role models?
Who are my role models? I never had... due to the fact that I've started to become an entrepreneur at a young age, so during university or even before, I never actually had a mentor or something like that. So I didn't have a person that would guide me through professional life or something like that. So there's pros and cons to being such a person, right? So because in the beginning you asked... if I would listen, if I always listened to the two people around me, and of course I didn't, right? So I didn't have this kind of a mentor that I would look up to and that he would advise me on things, he or she. So I didn't have that. So I didn't actually have a role model. You know, I've just become a father of two fantastic girls, 2 and 4 years old, and when you start to become a parent and a dad, you start to understand what your parents did for you. And, you know, if I had a role model, it would be my parents, but not in an entrepreneurial way. They were not entrepreneurs.
What is maybe a wish that you have for this whole space, for the future?
I think it would be great if Switzerland could unite on a vision, and everybody could help support this vision. And if you could come up with a vision that would say, I keep saying Switzerland doesn't need to be the blockchain hub for all the projects out there. You know, Switzerland might not be the most progressive jurisdiction. It might not be the most, even might not be the most creative one, right? So, but I think there are going to be certain use cases that will be perfect for Switzerland, just the way Switzerland is and has its position in a global context. And if this vision could be, let's say, a high quality hub for blockchain projects or something like that, it would be great if everybody could work towards this vision, and even the core people could work with the, you know, the government, and everybody would say, okay, let's try to make this vision a reality, and we're working on that, and I think we're even headed towards this vision, because I really think the opportunity to you know, also to create a different, a next level financial ecosystem based on trust. This could be one vision for Switzerland, but then also for the technology itself, it could become a hub of expertise, of knowledge, of experience that could lay a framework, a foundation for many projects and ideas to come. It could also work as a initiator of frameworks, of different frameworks for different use cases that could then be adapted and taken further by other countries and jurisdictions and people. But because Switzerland has this really unique setup and decentralized mindset. I think it could be ideal in providing the bottom layer of a lot of applications and protocols.
Yeah, a launch pad.
Yeah, why not? Yes, I think so.
Well, I wish you all the best. I hope it becomes a reality very soon. And I really appreciate your insight and your openness about all these topics. And it was very, very interesting. So thanks a lot for taking time today.
Thank you. It was my pleasure.
Thanks so much for joining us today. More info on our guests and our sponsors is in the show notes of this episode and on the podcast website, theblockchainandus.com. To help people find this podcast, it's important that you download, subscribe, and give it a top rating and review on iTunes or on the podcast platform of your choice. I'm Manuel Staggers, and I thank you very much for listening.